Welcome to another AAT podcast in the Employment Taxes series, where I will begin by considering what we need to do in planning ahead for the annual statutory requirement of submitting the following expenses and benefits return forms. Form P11D is the statutory return of expenses and benefits in kind that employers are required to complete and submit if any expenses have been paid to or on behalf of any employee or director, except where such expenses or benefits are excluded from reporting by virtue of a P11D dispensation, an exemption, or an extra statutory concession. Although there are very few of these that remain in force and that are relevant to P11D reporting. Most of them, like the former extra statutory concessions for long service awards and late night taxis, have become statutory exemptions. Form P9D is the statutory return of expenses, payments, and income from which income tax cannot be deducted. A note on the Form P9D advises employers to complete this return if you made expenses payments or provided benefits to an employee, but you have not completed a Form P11D because he or she earned at a rate of less than £8,500 per annum during the year to 5th of April 2011. The £8,500 limit is arrived at by including all expenses payments and benefits in kind before deducting any allowable expenses and after adjusting for any approved company pension contributions that are deducted from gross salary, and any givers you earn donations. I will say more about that in one of the following podcasts on completion of the P11Ds and P9Ds. Form P11DB is the dual-purpose return form and comprises the annual return of Class 1A national insurance contributions due for the relevant tax year, in this case 2010-11, and it is also the return of expenses and benefits, the employer declaration. All three of these return forms are statutory returns, and failure to submit them accurately and on time may result in the employer being charged late filing and/or inaccuracy penalties. The purpose of this series of P11D podcasts, covering preparation, calculation, and submission, is to avoid your employer or your client incurring costly penalties. I will also be presenting a P11D CPD Master Course in London on the 14th of May 2011, when these topics will be covered in much more detail, and I will be able to answer your questions. The statutory deadline for submission of these forms is 6th of July after the end of the tax year, in other words, 6th of July 2011. And this year, it is a working day. Therefore, we have no concerns about having to comply with an earlier filing date. However, we also need to consider some other deadlines that may have an impact on our reporting of expense payments and benefits in kind. The first date to consider is the payment deadline for any outstanding Class 1 national insurance contributions, which might arise in respect of some expense payments or benefits that we will be reporting on the Form P11D. These are the blue box entries on the P11D, which, unlike the brown box entries, do not attract Class 1A national insurance contributions. Potential Class 1 NICs liabilities on the blue box entries will include vouchers to be reported at Section C of the P11D, or any school fees paid or reimbursed by the employer, unless the employer has contracted directly with the school, which is not normally what happens. We need to check this now and cannot leave it until after the pay-as-you-earn annual returns have been submitted. July will be much too late if there is any Class 1 NICs liability to settle. Next, we need to look ahead to the 19th of May 2011 statutory date for submission of the P35 employer's annual return, remembering that extra statutory concession B46 will no longer be in force to extend that statutory deadline by 7 days. Therefore, the deadline is 19th of May 2011, and no later. At page 4, section 5 of the P35, we are asked to say whether completed forms P11D and P11DB are due or are not due. An early decision should be made on whether P11Ds and a P11DB are due or not. HMRC will issue P11DB penalty notices if the box is ticked to say the P11Ds are due, and then no returns are received. My advice to AAT members is, if in doubt, to tick the box to say P11Ds are not due, but of course to check later and make sure you submit them if they are due. Another key deadline that we need to think about is the 19th or 22nd July 2011, the Class 1A NIC's payment deadline. Put this date in your diary now and be ready to remind your client or your employer closer to the deadline and in good time to ensure that the payment is received by HMRC no later than the 19th of July if paying by cheque, or that the monies are received in HMRC's bank account by 22nd of July 2011 if payment is to be made by an acceptable electronic payment method. Section 2, the annual expenses and benefit return forms. Now that we know what forms are required, my next step is to take a look at those forms and compare them with the ones that I submitted last year. I want to see if anything has changed and consider whether I will have to do anything different this time. Well, good news. The only change is the year, from 2009-10 last year to 2010-11 this year. So we have no added complications to contend with. I am serious about taking a look at the forms and familiarising yourselves with the information that will be required, because in that way we can start our preparation on an informed basis. If we look at the form P9D, recognising of course that few of us will have to complete one of these forms, we see that Section A1 covers expenses payments, Section A2 requires details of any other payments or benefits, including any other payments or benefits not included on the employer's annual return form for 2010-11. For most of us, it is probably not too late to manually amend the P35 and P14s if we now realise that a P90 person has, for example, received a monthly round sum allowance for topping up his or her mobile phone, where HMRC would expect PAYE and NIC deductions. Some of my clients will put such top-ups through the PSA system. PAY settlement agreements will be covered in a later podcast. Section C of the P9D covers vouchers and credit cards. So, for example, if a generous employer were providing £60 per week in childcare vouchers to a P9D employee, the excess of £5 per week would have to be reported here. Section D deals with any accommodation benefit provided to a P9D employee, and I will deal with that in greater detail on one of the later podcasts. However, as part of our preparation, we should think about a P9D employee who might be in exempt job-related accommodation, but where some expenses will have to be reported. Form P11D is also unchanged, except for the tax year of 2010-11. And the first point to note, which can be missed if you print a copy of the form with a black and white printer, is the different colour boxes for entering the cash equivalent or value of the expense payments or benefits to be reported. The brown boxes signify a benefit in kind that attracts a Class 1A NIC's liability, which has to be paid to HMRC after the end of the tax year. And as I've already mentioned, by the 19th or 22nd of July 2011 payment deadline. More importantly, the blue boxes cover expenses and other payments made by the employer that could attract a Class 1 NIC's liability. That liability has to be paid much earlier and should be processed through the payroll. I referred earlier to the school fees example, but my advice to you is to look at the various reporting requirements and use the HMRC CWG5 booklet. Appendix 1 of that booklet provides guidance on whether or not there is an NIC's liability, then whether it is Class 1 or Class 1A NICs, and it also tells us where to report the item on Form P11D. Many of you who've heard me speak before will know it's one of my favourite booklets. Section A of the P11D is for reporting assets transferred to employees, so we might begin by checking the fixed asset register. Establish if any assets have been sold to employees and their market value, particularly company cars, where the market value must be used and not the written down book value of the car. Section B is for payments made on behalf of the employee and rarely requires any entry by us. Section C is headed vouchers and credit cards, where we might report the excess over £55 per week of childcare vouchers to a P11D employee, or other taxable vouchers given to staff, perhaps as a reward for doing something, or for long service, but not within the long service exemption provisions. The alternative for such voucher awards would be to gross up through the payroll or include them in a PAY settlement agreement if the employer wants to settle the liability with HMRC. Section D of the P11D is for reporting the taxable value of living accommodation, perhaps a company house or flat, but not hotel accommodation, which would normally be reported at Section N. Are we aware of any living accommodation being provided? And do we need to establish the value and any other costs involved before we can prepare the P11Ds? Next, we have Section E for reporting mileage allowance and passenger payments, but only to the extent that these exceed the authorised amounts of 40 pence per mile for the first 10,000 business miles, then 25 pence for any additional mileage. Some employers may have decided to pay more than the 40p authorised mileage limit because of the large increases in fuel prices that we have suffered in recent years. The excess over 40p and 25p should be reported here, and any reimbursement in excess of 40p will incur a NIC's liability. Has anyone been monitoring the 10,000-mile limit to reduce the reimbursement to 25p on any excess mileage? Do business mileage records need reviewing before we make a start on the P11Ds? Section F covers company cars and car fuel benefit. So where do we get the information we will need on company cars to be reported? Do we have to ask the leasing company or a garage dealership for details of the list prices of cars and any accessories, the CO2 emissions, etc.? Let's not leave that to the last minute. Here again we will come back to mileage records and employee expense claims, which might need reviewing to decide if car fuel benefits should be reported. Have employees who are provided with company fuel or credit cards to pay for fuel repaid the full cost of any private fuel? If anyone has to make good the cost of any private mileage, that needs to be done sooner rather than later, and certainly before we are ready to submit the 2010-11 P11Ds. On the CBD Master Courses, I will talk about the impact filing case. Section G is for reporting company vans and van fuel benefit, where their use has been more than business travel, home-to-work mileage, and what HMRC describes as insignificant private travel. Again, we come back to business mileage recording and monitoring of the use of company vans by employees. Who do we ask about this, and do we need to remind employees to submit their mileage records? Section H is where we have to report details of any interest-free loans or loans where the rate of interest charged to employees was below the official rate of interest. That was 4% for the whole of 2010-11. Nothing has to be reported here if the maximum amount outstanding of any and all loans did not exceed £5,000 at any time in the tax year, or if an employer director has paid at least 4% interest on the loans received. Who can tell us whether any loans were made in the year or were still outstanding from an earlier year? Do not be misled by any overdrawn director's loan accounts that might have been repaid before the end of the accounting period. Section I is for reporting private medical treatment or insurance, with the latter rarely posing a problem, although we might have to ask someone outside the company for the cost to be reported. But do we need to check whether any medical costs were incurred, such as consulting fees, and these may need to be reported or included in a PSA? Section J is where we report any qualifying relocation expenses, payments and benefits, which are in excess of the £8,000 tax relief limit. This might involve obtaining information from a number of different sources, perhaps a solicitor, a removal firm, the estate agent, or a specialist relocation company. So let's not leave this to the last minute. Also, we may need information on costs incurred in the previous year 2009-10, as well as for the tax year 2010-11. we must remember that we have to take into account all the costs from the start of the relocation process. The limit of £8,000 is per relocation, not just for the tax year. Section K is rarely of interest and refers to services supplied, perhaps free conveyancing for employees of a firm of solicitors. There will be nothing to report if the employees pay the marginal cost, or there is no marginal cost. Section L is headed assets placed at the employee's disposal, and a company car would be an obvious one, but we have already dealt with that because cars are taxed under specific legislation. The use of laptops, fax machines, and other business assets should be exempt. But is there a company boat, a plane, or a helicopter to consider, or more mundane matters, such as furniture, fixtures, and fittings, in a company house or flat? Perhaps a painting kept at home by the director? Non-uniform clothing can cause problems and may fall under this heading. We perhaps need to ask a few questions. We're almost at the end of the P11D form, being left with what I call the sweeping up sections. Firstly, Section M for other items, including subscriptions and professional fees. There should be a dispensation to cover job-related subscriptions and professional fees, such as your AAT subscription, if reimbursed by the employer. We can ignore magazine subscriptions like Pay and Benefits magazine, used by payroll and HR staff, but we cannot ignore LA Fitness or David Lloyd subscriptions if paid by the employer. That will be a benefit to be reported. Section M is the only dual-purpose section where we can choose a brown or a blue box, so use Appendix 1 of the CWG5 booklet to decide what goes here and what information you're going to need. Last but not least is Section N, expenses payments made to or on behalf of the employees. And in an ideal world, I would usually like to see this left blank, because every employer should have a PLMD dispensation to cover travel and subsistence payments, business entertaining, and business telephone costs. But being realistic, we might still have some taxable elements, and it is the sweeping up section, so we need to think about analysing expense claims and deciding what has to be reported here. The final form that I have to consider is the P11DB return of Class 1A National Insurance contributions and the employer declaration, which can be left until the P11Ds are finalised. We will then add up all brown box entries to arrive at the total benefits liable to Class 1A NICs, and we may need to make some adjustments in Section 4 for employees coming from abroad or who have gone abroad to work, where no NICs may be due. But that is something for another day and another podcast. Section 3, reporting exclusions. Whilst we are looking to prepare to submit the 2010 P11Ds and P9Ds, we do need to think about what can be excluded from the reporting process, starting with anything covered by a P11D dispensation. A P11D dispensation is a notice of nil liability, and it's where HMRC says we don't have to report anything. We need to locate the dispensation and ask ourselves, is it still relevant and valid? There is usually no expiry date, but have the circumstances changed? If not, good, tick the mental box to say dispensation in force, and we can ignore business travel, subsistence, entertaining, telephone calls, professional subscriptions, or whatever has been included in that dispensation. But make a note of that. Our next exclusion will be any items included in the employer's PAY settlement agreement. Perhaps taxable staff entertaining, taxable functions, awards, and indeed anything included in the PAY settlement agreement that would otherwise have to be reported on the P11Ds. PSAs are often dealt with separately to the P11Ds, so please speak to each other and establish what can be excluded from reporting. We might need to tell the employees or directors not to put it on their tax return as well. Next, I always turn to Chapter 5 of the HMRC Booklet 480, Expenses and Benefits Guide, where we have the A to W with no X, Y, or Z items, which can be excluded from reporting. First, we find the exemption for annual parties or similar functions. The exemption limit is £150 per head, which means attendees, including employees and their guests. That must take into account all the costs, including VAT and any extras for travel, accommodation, entertainment, etc. Health screening assessments and medical checkups can be excluded from PLMD reporting, but the exemption is restricted to one such checkup or screening per annum. Late night taxis from work to home, but not from home to work, enjoy a limited exemption for no more than 60 journeys per annum. To qualify, there are four conditions to be satisfied, including working late until at least 9 p.m. on an irregular basis, where transport has ceased or it would be unreasonable to use it, and the transport is a taxi or equivalent road transport. HMRC has tightened up on the requirement for employers to keep records and employers to carry out periodic checks. Indeed, HMRC in the last budget is now consulted on scrapping this exemption. But we will have to consider reporting any non-exempt items for 2010-11. There is an exemption for travel between home and work when public transport is disrupted by strike action. Therefore, the cost of travel and overnight accommodation at or near the workplace would not have to be reported on the 2010-11 P11Ds. And there has been some strike action in London and elsewhere during the last year. Unfortunately, the exemption does not extend to public transport which is disrupted by climate conditions such as heavy snow or flooding, and that, of course, has been a terrible problem in recent years. One company mobile phone is exempt and does not have to be reported, irrespective of whether there is any private use or not. Childcare vouchers, whether involving salary sacrifice or not, do not have to be reported up to the £55 per week, £243 per month limit. But any excess must be reported at Section C of the P11D. There is a wide statutory exemption for work-related training costs, and the conditions are set out in the booklet 480, where you will find other non-taxable and therefore non-reportable items. HMRC guidance on trivial benefits tells us that there is no lower limit beneath which benefits are not taxed. However, for P9D employees, we do not have to report expenses incurred solely and necessarily in the performance of the duties and other amounts that do not exceed £25. HMRC will also agree that an employer does not have to report trivial benefits such as a gift of flowers to celebrate the birth of a child or when an employee is sick. It would not apply to flowers or another gift given as a reward, say for organising a work event. The provision of free tea, coffee and water to employees is generally exempt, but if the exemption does not apply, HMRC will treat the provision as trivial and therefore neither taxable nor reportable. Seasonal gifts such as a turkey or ordinary bottle of wine at Christmas are treated as trivial and do not have to be reported. But HMRC would probably seek to tax more generous gifts, such as a Harrods hamper. A PAY settlement agreement would be the most suitable route to avoid reporting. Seasonal flu jabs are treated as trivial, and welfare counselling is regarded as a minor benefit, as is the provision of equipment and services for employees with a disability to assist them to work, for example, a wheelchair or a hearing aid. They are treated as exempt and do not have to be reported, but this is always subject to the relevant conditions being satisfied. Section 4, Other Information. What other information do we need before we can make a start on the P11Ds? I recommend that you review the P11Ds that were submitted for 2009-10 to be able to identify what has been reported previously, and hopefully we can avoid missing something obvious. My advice has always been to maintain a permanent P11D, PSA or tax file, which should be kept under review and regularly updated. Check any dispensation, as I said earlier. Confirm that it is relevant and valid and decide what can be excluded, but also look for any specific exclusions from the dispensation. For example, costs of overseas trips when accompanied by a spouse or partner will still have to be reported on the P11D. If you find that the only items reported last year were company cars and or medical insurance benefit, it should be fairly straightforward. I already discussed contacting whoever we must to obtain details of car list prices, etc., and we should establish from the same source, perhaps, details of any company car changes. People changing their cars, people getting additional cars, people having their cars removed. Do we need payroll information from the payroll bureau or from a bookkeeper or someone else who does the payroll, such as the amounts made good, repaying company loans, paying part of the cost of a benefit, such as medical benefit? Whenever we need to obtain information from a third party, we must give them sufficient notice. I always recommend giving them a copy of what they provided last year, because this will make it easier for them to identify where they will find the information and exactly what we want of them. One of the more time-consuming aspects for employers that do not have a PLMD dispensation will be to analyse expenses and petty cash claims. Also, don't forget company credit cards and anything that might have been paid through the purchasing system, for example, hotel, travel, etc. costs. We must remember that HMRC employer compliance officers will review those records when they come calling, so let us not miss anything. We should remind employees to submit their March expenses promptly, and as I've already said, what about their mileage records? Section 5 Summary. PLMD reporting of expense payments and benefits in kind is an onerous task, and failing to do this accurately and on time could prove to be very costly. Preparing well for the coming task is important, as is starting early. I hope that the tips and pointers provided by this podcast, the first in a series of PLMD podcasts, will make the job easier for you and or your employers or clients. As I've mentioned, there is also the full-day CPD Master Course, which is in London on the 14th of May 2011. There I will look in greater depth at the calculation and reporting of expense payments and benefits in kind. There will be worked examples, and you will have the opportunity to ask lots of questions and to obtain more practical advice on how to successfully submit the 2010-11 P9Ds, P11Ds and the PLMDB return for your employer or your clients. Thank you for listening.